Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
We are back with another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Shout out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Gerritsen and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You'll find they've been doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area and Northeast Kansas for years. Also a shout out to Active Family Chiropractic. Dealing with any neck, back, shoulder, or any type of pain, go in today and schedule an appointment. Their office is located on 135th and Antioch in Overland Park, Kansas. Or just give them a call at 913-681-6013. That's 913-681-6013. Stop dealing with those nagging pains that keep you up at night and call Active Family Chiropractic today. Though it pains me to say it, I feel we might have hit rock bottom yesterday with the Kansas City Royals. Not on where we may be feeling about how this season can turn out, but I think through these first 40 games, you could say yesterday was rock bottom. The Royals led 6-0 after 7. Brady Singer was dealing, had his second straight outing in which he threw 7 shutout innings, and he was only at 95 pitches. The Royals' offense had given him enough, and you felt like, though the Twins took the first two, you were going to walk away with at least one. You were going to salvage the series finale, not get swept by a division rival like Minnesota. But just like they had done the week before, in Colorado against the Rockies, 6-0 lead, Daniel Lynch had dealt, I believe only for 5 2/3, but still pitched very well in a ballpark that doesn't favor pitchers, and the Royals led 6-0 at the end of 7 innings. And then, or it might have been after 7, I think it was after 6 innings, excuse me, and then the Rockies busted it open in the 7th. But nonetheless, a 6-0 lead completely evaporated over the final two. And as for yesterday, what was the biggest head-scratcher, maybe for me, was that the Royals turned to Taylor Clark, who was the exact same pitcher who couldn't pull it together in the 6-0 game against Colorado the week before. And like he did yesterday and in the game against Colorado, he didn't record an out. Yeah, yesterday, Taylor Clark came in after Singer, who went 7 shutout innings, struck out 3, walked 3, allowed 4 hits, no runs. Taylor Clark comes on, didn't record an out, 4 hits, 4 runs, 4 earned. Then, after things had already spiraled out of control, Mike Matheny goes and grabs Scott Barlow. And Barlow, though he is your fireman, he can only go 2/3 of an inning. He only gets 2 outs of the cataclysmic inning the Royals had there in the top of the 8th. Like I said, cataclysmic, I think. You know what I'm saying. And anyways, Scott Barlow comes on, gets 2 outs, and then gives up a 2-run bomb to Kyle Garlick. So it's 6-5. And still, Scott Barlow cannot limit the damage. He can't finish the inning. And here comes Josh Staumont. And in all honesty, if you were watching that game, Josh Staumont got bailed out on the first batter he faced in Luis Arraez. 2 pitches that were not strikes were called strikes. And if it weren't for the umpire gifting Josh Staumont a couple of calls, the Twins could have completely busted it open there, taking a 3 or 4 run lead. Nobody was able to get the Twins out. Any 2-strike count, the Twins were putting it in play. They were blooping it into left or hitting it hard to right. They were hitting it all over the place, hitting it out of the stadium. The Twins yesterday exposed one of many flaws the Royals have. And we know the Royals have a lot of flaws. But I think when it comes down to it, and when I look at this team, I don't necessarily want to blame the players. I really don't. Because I think when you look at the lineup yesterday, Whit Merrifield, Andrew Benintendi, Hunter Dozier, MJ Melendez behind the plate, Emmanuel Vera in the field, even Carlos Santana, Kyle Isbell, Nicky Lopez, and Sebastian Rivero behind the plate, they did enough to win that game. Brady Singer did enough to win that game. And yeah, the biggest culprit of yesterday was the bullpen. The bullpen was awful. The bullpen was a complete disaster. And two of your best bullpen arms were disasters yesterday. Because then, in the top of the ninth, Mike Matheny leaves Josh Staumann on because you have no other option. You can't close the game with anybody else. And what happens once again? A leadoff walk. I knew right then and there the game's over. Not trying to be pessimistic, not trying to be negative. You knew if Josh Staumann allowed a leadoff walk, the Twins are going to tie or take the lead in that inning. And they took the lead. Josh Staumann couldn't really crawl out of it. And in the end, they had to turn to Colin Snyder. So Barlow and Staumann combined to only throw an inning and two-thirds, and they allowed three earned runs. Walked four. The Royals walked seven on the day. And here's the reoccurring problem. And Dayton Moore had pointed this out, that 40 games, the 40-game mark is when you can start making changes, start evaluating where you are in the season. You know exactly what this team is going to be. At this current moment in time, just based off projections, the Royals are expected to lose 100-plus games. I don't think they're going to get to that level. I think they are going to catch fire at some point once the obvious changes are going to be made. Now, what happened in the Royals' last near debacle in Colorado? Well, they came back and won that game. The Royals couldn't come back and win yesterday, so they allowed seven unanswered runs and fell to the Twins and were swept by the Twins 7-6. And now they head off to Arizona for a two-game series, and they play this same Minnesota Twins team next weekend. And by the way, after this Arizona series, and Arizona's no slouch either, Arizona this year is 21-22. The schedule for the Royals coming up, oh, it's ugly. It is really, really ugly. So they play Minnesota, then they go on the road again and face Cleveland. They come back home on June 3rd and face Houston for a three-game series. Then they welcome Toronto for a three-game series. Yeah, the Orioles aren't very good, so I'll give you that. A four-game series at home against Baltimore. Then they ship back out to the Bay Area. They take on the Giants for a three-game series. And they have that West Coast road trip where they go Giants, Oakland, and L.A. Then Oakland back again at home, and then Texas to wrap up June. That is a tough, tough schedule for the Royals coming up at the tail end of May and in June. That is where, likely, if it already hasn't already, the season completely slips away from Kansas City. I mean, it pretty much already has. You're 14-26 through 40 games. You're 10.5 games out of first place. I don't believe this team has the star power, the stamina to make some sort of run that can climb them back into the race. I'm hoping I'm wrong, but I think when you look at the trajectory of this team, they just don't have all the right pieces yet. Now, can they become more interesting to watch? Of course they can. You can start by doing exactly what you did to Terry Bradshaw. You can fire Cal Eldred. Yesterday, Marco, I don't know how much of the game you watched. Did you notice that every time, and this has kind of become a common occurrence, every time Cal Eldred visited the mound, it was followed by a hit or a walk. Every time Cal Eldred went out to the mound to calm down a pitcher, give some advice, it never worked out.
I was going to say, I saw something on Twitter. Someone was complaining, saying, "Stop sending Cal Eldred to the mound because it's like bad luck. He's just, every time he's gone up there, it's just nothing has gone well." Every time he went out to do a mound visit,
it's almost like waving the white flag. It really is. And I also saw another brilliant tweet yesterday. I wish I could have bookmarked it or something, or just retweeted it at the time. You remember Dayton Moore's quote of, "Well, if you're gonna harp on Cal Eldred for the struggles of Chris Bubich and the struggles of Jackson Carr, well, you better damn well give him credit for Daniel Lynch." Well, how about this? And there was a tweet that said, if you're going to harp on the Royals for blowing the game in the final two innings, you better give them credit for playing well in the first seven. I mean, that's how stupid the comment was. That, in the end, he's not getting enough done. And it's the same reoccurring problems the Royals have had for 5 years. Their pitchers don't throw strikes, they don't get ahead of hitters, and they don't have put-away pitches. And now it appears the Royals have emphasized the four-seam fastball, where last year the Royals emphasized the sinker as their primary number one pitch, and some guys it worked well for them, some guys not. I don't think it worked well for Brad Keller, and clearly Brad Keller is a four-seam type of guy. But the Royals are in shambles right now. And yes, some of the young guys are making it entertaining, and that is an important part of it. I like what I've seen from Bobby Witt Jr. I like what I've seen from MJ Melendez, Kyle Isbell, Manuel Rivera, Brady Singer, Daniel Lynch. There is some bright spots to this team, which make them watchable, but at the end of the day, there's still not enough up there to gain your attention. Vinny Pasquantino yesterday was 3-for-5. A double, a home run. His home run cleared the Hy-Vee tent. If you've ever been out to Omaha and watched a Storm Chasers game, there's a Hy-Vee tent that is well beyond the right field wall, and Vinny Pasquantino hit it over the Hy-Vee tent. Vinny Pasquantino should have been on this roster a month ago. The Royals haven't decided to do that. If they don't do it before Cleveland, I'm starting to question just how serious the front office is about this team's progression. Because Vinny Pasquantino is 24 years old. Nick Prado was 23 years old. MJ Melendez was not hitting well before he came up to the big league level. Now he has become a reliable type of hitter in this lineup. At least it feels like through 50 or 60 ABs. He doesn't look completely overmatched like some have before. And what's the worst thing that can happen if Vinny Pasquantino comes up? Or Nick Prado comes up? All they have to be is better than Carlos Santana or Ryan O'Hearn. That's not a very high bar. There's not any pressure on those two to exceed those expectations. They could have a horrible month and still play better than Carlos Santana and Ryan O'Hearn. And the Royals, I mean, would you not be more entertained turning on the TV if you looked around the infield and it was Vinny Pasquantino at first base, Nicky Lopez at second, Bobby Witt Jr. at short, and Emmanuel Vera at third? I mean, I think it'd be an interesting lineup. Kyle Isbell in center, Andrew Benintendi in left. Nick Prado's played a little bit in the outfield. I'm not expecting them to go all out and put Nick Prado in the lineup along with Vinny Pasquantino. I think one of them gets the nod first. But there is absolutely room right now at the major league level for Vinny Pasquantino. Salvi's on the IL. The first basemen aren't hitting. They called up Dairon Blanco yesterday. I mean, there is room in this lineup for Vinny Pasquantino. And it's shocking the Royals haven't made that move. Now, Dayton Moore said, 40 games in, that's usually when you can start evaluating your team and look at changes you may be able to make. Well, if changes aren't made today, then we know it was a complete bold-faced lie. It was an absolute lie. Now, Terry Bradshaw was fired on Monday afternoon in the game after Colorado, that near collapse at Coors Field. So maybe Cal Eldred is the first one to go. Or maybe it's Vinny Pasquantino getting called up to the major league level. But the Royals are in a spot going into this year where they also have a good opportunity. And here's what I mean by that. They can trade Andrew Benintendi. They can trade Hunter Dozier. They can trade Brad Keller. And if he started playing well, and he has been playing well of late, they could trade Whit Merrifield. And here's why that can be a positive for the Royals. The Royals are not in stage one of their rebuild. They're in stage 3/4 of maybe, maybe that's too low. I'd say they're maybe in stage 5 or 6, and 10 would be legitimately competing for an American League Central Division title. They're about 5 or 6 steps away, or 4 or 5 steps away. But here's how they can speed up that process. Andrew Benintendi is going to garner a lot of trade interest at the deadline. And here's where I think the Royals could possibly screw it up. They could extend Andrew Benintendi in the middle of the season. And here's why that's really stupid. Andrew Benintendi is set to be a free agent at the end of the year. If you really want to extend Andrew Benintendi, guess what you can do? You can trade Benintendi at the trade deadline, get prospects, and then extend him in the offseason or sign him back. That's the exact same thing you could be doing if you were choosing to extend him now. because the only reason you want to extend him now is because you don't want him to hit the open market and the off chance somebody really competitive, i.e. a New York Yankees, i.e. a Toronto Blue Jays go out and spend more money than you in the offseason to bring Andrew Benintendi in. I don't think a lot of teams, though, are going to break bank to get Andrew Benintendi. So not only could you trade Benintendi, you could get him back if you want to. Hunter Dozier. If Hunter Dozier's playing the way he is now, you could get some value for Hunter Dozier. And I think Hunter Dozier, in a lineup that has a lot of protection, he could thrive. And he's already hitting pretty well this season. And you may not know what you're going to get from Hunter Dozier next season. He's getting up there in age. He's, what, 30, 31? You're not going to get the best version of Hunter Dozier next year or the year after that when his contract is up. You can trade Hunter Dozier, get some value. Brad Keller's 27. You may not get another year like this from Brad Keller. And guess what? You can get some prospects for your arguably number one starter. There are guys we didn't even think about trading a couple of years back that now you can. You know, if you didn't with Whit Merrifield, now you can with some of these guys, because let's look at the reality here. The Royals are still probably 3-ish years, I would say, from legitimately contending for an American League Central title. Maybe next year if they spend money, it can speed up the process. But here's the reality. The Tigers spent money this offseason, and the Tigers had higher-ranked prospects and ones that were at their major league level. They had better pitching prospects than the Royals. The Tigers are worse than the Royals right now, at least below them in the standings. I think in the end, the Tigers will be able to surpass them because they just have more star power on their team than the Royals do, and some of their thriving players are not hitting well for Kansas City. But the Royals have a big opportunity right now, and that's when you're looking at the current state of this roster. Number one, you do have young talent that I think can get you to the next level. I think you're already starting to see it with MJ Melendez, Kyle Isbell, Bobby Witt Jr. You're seeing that type of talent. I think Emmanuel Vera can be more of a bench bat, a good platoon bench bat for you in the future, but he's not an everyday player. Now, the young pitchers, I like what I've seen from Daniel Lynch. I like what I've seen from Brady Singer. You have two guys there, and we knew that in the 2018 draft class, not everybody was going to be a star, but we always felt like the ones with the highest upside were Brady Singer and Daniel Lynch. Maybe you were one of those that were hopeful on Jackson Coar. You'll probably see him at the end of the year. Now, you can still bolster this farm system, and here's why that's a good thing. Are we really confident that the next time the Royals are in the postseason, the ones leading them there are Brad Keller, Whit Merrifield, Hunter Dozier, and Salvador Perez? Well, I'd hope not, because that means the young prospects you had weren't cutting it, or they were near the bottom of the barrel. No, the next time the Royals are in the postseason, it's going to have to be on the back of Bobby Witt Jr., on the back of MJ Melendez, Vinny Pasquantino, Nick Prado. That's your lineup of the future. There needs to be room for those guys as well. And I think where the Royals misjudged some of their timing, you know, you gave Whit Merrifield that big contract extension, not money-wise, but years-wise, Hunter Dozier, Salvador Perez even, and you looked at them and you said, they're going to be on our team when we make the postseason because we're going the exact same route we did back in 2014 and 15, where we had the Alex Gordons and Billy Butlers that were paired with the Eric Hosmers, Mike Moustakas, Alcides Escobar. It's not going to work that way because Billy Butler and Alex Gordon are not the same players that Whit Merrifield and Hunter Dozier were. Like, that's just not the reality of it, because though Whit Merrifield was the best player from 2018, 2019, 2020, Hunter Dozier was not. Billy Butler and Alex Gordon were the only two really good players on the Royals for a long time. So you had some stability there. And then the prospects you had great hitting prospects. You can pair that all together. But you have to adapt, and you have to do it a different way the next time around. The Royals don't have that type of talent to just put it all together and in 1 year become a playoff contender. No, the Royals can be in a spot now where it may take a year to, or maybe an extra year to get into contention, but you feel better about the outlook of this team. If the Royals trade away a lot of the guys that in 2018 and 19 were their young guys, you can get some value there. Brad Keller's going to get value. Hunter Dozier can get value. Andrew Benintendi's going to get a lot of value. You can get prospects into your farm system, keep reloading, where you don't just empty the cupboard here, because now we're getting into that spot where the Royals are promoting a lot of these top prospects. The guys that were can't-miss guys. Now, I think Bobby Witt Jr. is probably the only one that was a can't-miss prospect, but MJ Melendez is now at the big league level. Prado and Pasquantino are about to be at the big league level. Kyle Isbell at the big league level. You need to keep reloading that farm system. And that's what good teams do. And the ones that year in, year out, their window never really completely closes. It just stays open a little bit longer. And the Royals have that chance if they will part ways with guys that they've been loyal to forever. The one guy I think Dayton Moore knew that he was never going to trade was Salvador Perez. And fine, if you want to be that way and Salvador Perez will be a Royal for life, I can get behind that. But Whit Merrifield deserves to play for a contending team. You know, Brad Keller deserves to play for a contending team. Those are guys, Scott Barlow, Josh Stallman. I'm talking about wiping out all the guys that you have posters of around Kauffman Stadium because you are going to be a seller at the deadline. That's just the reality of it. Hell, if you want to speed up the process even more, trade a couple of pitching prospects that you have to get a guy for next year that you can have for a year or two. If you want to make a trade that keeps you a contender for a little bit, go ahead and do it. But be transactional. Don't just stick. If the Royals at the end of the deadline have done nothing, that's a serious problem. And a very, very serious problem because the guys that are in this lineup every single day, they're not going to be on the next contending team. Michael A. Taylor's not going to be on the next Royals contending team. Whit Merrifield's not. Hunter Dozier's not. But guys like Bobby Witt Jr., hell, if Nicky Lopez really played well, and I mean really played well in the next couple of months, would you not look into trading Nicky Lopez? I mean, Marco, when you look at this team, and it's not like they got a bunch of 22 and 23-year-olds all over the field. They've got some guys that are 26, 27, 28. Now, Nicky Lopez has regressed, but his defense is phenomenal. If you went out and traded away five or six guys, kind of did what the Cubs did last year, where, no, the Cubs had more talent than the Royals do right now at this point. But you really go out and continue to stock that farm system, which I think is the most important thing you can get from this season. The season of contention is lost. The Royals are not going to have a winning record this year. They're going to lose upwards of 80 to maybe early 90 games. That's just kind of where we are at this point. Now, what can make them fun, and 90 loss teams are not fun, but maybe to lower that number to a mid-80s loss team or low 80s loss team, you got the young prospects up there. You don't need to pair them with all types of experience on the field. You can have an infield and a lineup of five or six rookies. Why not go out and make some big-time trades? And by big-time, I mean in Kansas City here. I mean, you trade away Whit Merrifield, Hunter Dozier, Scott Barlow, Josh Stallman, Brad Keller, Nicky Lopez. Why not? Andrew Benintendi. Why not do it? What is holding the Royals back from doing that?
Maybe it's just because they continue to do things one way, it seems like. You talk about trades. It seems like the trade route has worked out pretty well for them when they've made them. History shows. Even in the last kind of 2 years with Benintendi bringing him to Kansas City via the trade. You traded for Amir Garrett this season also. He's worked out fine as a reliever, I guess. A nice piece. You didn't have to give up much for him. How about that? I would say the return there is pretty nice. Let's see. Who else would they have had traded for in the recent years? They've traded.
I think when they trade for major league players, it's worked out well. I mean, the biggest trade of all time they've had, and that was Zach Greinke to the Brewers and getting young prospects.
And I'm thinking even close. I mean, I'm thinking even more recent than that. Hell, even after the World Series years. Oliveras.
Yeah.
Player that was a prospect that you landed in the trade. Also, that's another thing. Where's he going to fit into this lineup when he comes back? I think that's just the problem is the Royals haven't made those type of playoff championship mindset type of moves since they did get ready to go to the World Series back in 2013, and we all know what that is. It's one of those. They need a shake up, and It's touched on that entirely throughout your monologue is that they need to do things a bit differently. Start focusing on the future and rather what you can do with the now. go out and try to find some new pieces. Because, yeah, it's not anything new for Royals and for Royals fans. It's Royals Review just tweeted this out this morning. Royals, after the first 40 games since 2018, 13-27, 14-26, 14-26, 18-22, and then now 14-26 yet again. So three out of the last 5 years in the first 40 games, the Royals have finished 14-26. It's got to be something different. Because what is something they haven't done since 2018? Really made a blockbuster trade. Traded one of their top young guys on their lineup. I think the youngest, biggest name that they've traded in the last 5 years was a Khalil Lee when they shipped him off. I'm trying to think of a prospect that, because it's always been about the prospects and getting them through the farm system, getting them up into the majors. It just blows my mind that the pitchers, it seemed like they needed fewer. Their benchmark of service time was far less than some of the guys that you're seeing right now in Prado, Vinny Pascantino, who still hasn't, we haven't seen up in a major league uniform. But just look how much longer it took for a Melendez to get called up. It's one of those things where it's been the same thing for the last 5 years. Just different players, different hopes, different expectations. Gosh, and just different ways of getting to that record after the first 40 games. Last year, it didn't even feel like they had won 18 games after the first 40 games. But that right there is a sign of some changes needing to be made. And I know there's frustration growing around, the organizations, the people that cover the Kansas City Royals. On a daily basis, there's noticeable changes that need to be made, but the Royals haven't. I mean, I guess the firing of Terry Bradshaw was a sign, but
it's a minor move,
like you said right there. It's a minor move.
It all comes about looking yourself in the mirror at this point. And I think what the Royals are struggling to do in the Royals front office, that is they were trying to tell fans that in this rebuild, right, 2018 to now, they wanted most people to believe that this was going to be the year that was very comparative to 2013 or comparable to 2013. And then next year would be their 2014 Royals. You go out, you have the young prospects up there, you've spent some money, and now you go win. The reality is the Royals are not going to be a playoff team, not next year. But here's where you can kind of squint and look. And this is why I'm still holding out hope for this team, is that what have we seen so far from MJ Melendez and Bobby Witt Jr. and Kyle Isbell when they've gotten everyday plate appearances? They look good. They look comfortable. Kyle Isbell is hitting the ball incredibly hard. He's getting good swings on the ball. Even when he's down two strikes, he's not overmatched. He's putting the ball in play. I know we've been harping on putting the ball in play, but he's not striking out 50% of the time. You know, Bobby Witt Jr. started the season slow, now heating up a little bit more. MJ Melendez has looked comfortable up in a Kansas City Royals uniform. His chase rate is the best on the Royals. So when you give these guys everyday at-bats, and maybe you pair even more young guys up there, Vinny Pascantino, Nick Prado, they need these at-bats now. And if you want to compare them to a rebuild, I don't think it's so much of the Astros or the Cubs rebuild back in 2013 when the Astros did it, and then the Cubs did it in 2013, might have been 2013 as well, where it was more so of a, we're throwing together slop, right? We're just putting no talent out there in the field. You lose 110 games. You get a number one pick, you get your Carlos Correa, then you build around him, right? Your international signings are great. You go make minor trades throughout that, and then eventually you have this great team. It's not like that rebuild. And I would say if we're going to compare it to some team that we all know very well, it's the Chicago White Sox. I sound crazy in saying this, and I'm not saying they have the same type of players, but the route they can take can be very similar to what the White Sox did. Back in 2018 and 19, even 17 for that matter, the White Sox had their young talent. They had their young stars. Tim Anderson at the time, Yoan Moncada, Michael Kopech, all those guys. Jose Abreu was one of the more experienced guys in that roster, but they had those guys. In 19, here comes Luis Robert. Here comes Eloy Jimenez. The White Sox were not good. They lost upwards of 80 and 90 games. But here's what was great for them, is though guys like Yoan Moncada struggled, though Tim Anderson struggled in the field, though Luis Robert had a high strikeout rate, guess what happens once they got good? Now they're comfortable. Now they know pitch recognition. Now they know how to hit at the major league level. And then the White Sox said in 2020, the COVID year, they said, we're going to go spend some money. Right? We're going to go out and get some big-name pitchers. We're going to go bolster our bullpen. We're going to go bring in guys to this roster that can help us win a World Series. The Royals have that opportunity now where you have these young guys and say, we may lose 95 games, but they're going to get their plate appearances in. They're going to get their experience. They're going to have a full year under their belt, basically a full year under their belt. And then next year, we don't have to worry about what they can be for this lineup. We know what we're going to get from this lineup. We know what Bobby Witt Jr. can bring, what the ceiling he has. We know what MJ Melendez can bring you. Vinny Pasquantino, Kyle Isbell, Edward Olivares maybe. You have those guys where it's not so much of question marks and banking on guys that are aging to give you the same thing they did when they were 27 and 28. You know, the Royals for so long now, they're expecting at the major league level for Whit Merrifield to give you the same type of production he did back in 2018 and 19. That's not going to happen. They're expecting Salvador Perez getting up there in age to be the same type of player he was even last year. It's just not always going to happen. But for young guys, you know they can keep going and reach their ceiling. It's why the White Sox have done their rebuild perfectly and why, though they're underachieving, you know they're a good week away from really getting back in the American League Central race. They're in second place, not like they're out of it, but they can surpass the Twins. That's the rebuild they should go after. Get your young guys the at-bats now. While the season is lost, get your young pitchers the innings they need. Work with them. Work with the right guys. You know, I like Alex Zumwalt and Mike Tosa are already taking over the hitter's role. That means more prospects need to be at the major league level. If they refuse to do that and they keep giving at-bats to Michael A. Taylor, to guys like, you know, or giving outings to, let's say, hell, who am I even blanking on right now? I mean, giving bullpen outings to Taylor Clark instead of Scott Barlow to boost his value. I mean, instead of giving outings to Colin Snyder. I mean, these are the type of guys you need to find what they have. And there still are guys that are kind of up in the air. Well, that's the exact time now to go and do that. But for your prospects that are supposed to be on the next contending team, you have to give them everyday starts. We don't want to see Carlos Santana, Ryan O'Hearn in the lineup every single day. We don't want to see them hitting cleanup. We don't want to see Michael A. Taylor out there every single day. Hell, even though Whit Merrifield is a key part of this team, he deserves to go be for a contender. He doesn't need to be taking everyday starts from maybe Kyle Isbell in right field. Whit Merrifield has earned his right to go play for a contender, and he is a Royals fan favorite, but hopefully moving forward, the Royals will look themselves in the mirror and say, it's not our year, next year's not our year, but here's where we can improve our team so that by 2024, would that be, they're ready to go. And maybe we spend some more money in 2023, we can construct this roster and then compete for the American League Central, and maybe the Twins and the White Sox are tailing back off into the middle of the pack. And then the Royals and the Tigers would make their way with their young prospects back up to the top of the division. We are going to take a quick break here, and when we come back on the shift, we'll talk about some NBA basketball as the Warriors have gone up 3-0 on the Dallas Mavericks, and the Miami Heat surprising everybody with their 2-1 lead over the Boston Celtics. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I am your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We'll go over our weekend recap of what happened in the NBA in both the Western Conference Finals and the Eastern Conference Finals. On Friday after our show, it was the Warriors taking down the Mavs 126-117 in a crushing blow to, I think, everybody in Dallas, because if Dallas was going to take down Golden State, the first part in that was stealing a game in the Bay Area, and they nearly did. A big second-half lead completely evaporated by the efforts of Steph Curry, Kevin Looney, and Klay Thompson, and Jordan Poole, for that matter. Steph, in that game, had 32 points and 11 of 21 shooting. Kevin Looney, it's Kevin, is it Kevin Looney, Marco, or Kevon Looney? It's K-E-V-O-N.
I'm sorry. Oh, man. No, it's Kevin, I think.
It's Kevin.
I think it's, I like that, though, Kevon Looney.
I just don't want to get it wrong, because there would be an I in Kevin, but it's no I there. It's K-E-V-O-N.
but I don't think I've ever heard him called Kevon Looney.
No, it's Kevin.
I think it's Kevin Looney.
No, but that's great though. That's a
yeah. I was like, I'm gonna give the effort of at least trying to maybe get his name right. But yeah, Kevin Looney.
It's like the first day of school. He's like, nah, teach. It's I appreciate Kevon. The effort.
Yeah, appreciate the effort. It's not Kevin. But then Andrew Wiggins had 16 points on 5 of 14 shooting. Klay had 15 on 6 of 10 shooting. Jordan Poole had 23 on 7 of 10 shooting off the bench for the Golden State Warriors. Had the highest plus minus at 26. As for Dallas, Luka gave him 42, and that was in our factor fiction if he'd score over 30. Well, he did even more than that. He scored over 40. But outside of him and Jalen Brunson and Reggie Bullock, nobody else could really score for Dallas. Jalen Brunson gave him 31. Reggie Bullock gave him 21. But after that, only one other player for Dallas scored in double figures as they fell in game two, 126 to 117. Then on Saturday, I watched this game, and I'm still kind of floored by what Miami's been able to do with who they have. I mean, Bam Adebayo, ridiculous, by the way, 31 points in this game, 10 boards, 6 assists, 4 steals. He's not anywhere close to the Greek freak, but he is a freak of nature. He's one of the best on-ball defenders I've seen, and he's huge. He's 6'11", is it? 6'9", so he's not that big. 6'9", and Bam Adebayo can pretty much guard anybody, I would say. And if it came down to Miami playing Golden State in the finals, you wouldn't put him on Steph. He'd probably get tasked with defending Andrew Wiggins, maybe Draymond Green for a little bit. I mean, he's not going to guard Steph Curry or Klay Thompson, but he does have that type of versatility. But on Saturday, he was phenomenal. In 41 minutes, Bam Adebayo got 31 points, plus minus of plus 17. Then P.J. Tucker, 17. They had Max Strus giving them 16. Kyle Lowry had 11. Even with only 19 minutes and 8 points, the Miami Heat were able to win this game. And that was 8 points from Jimmy Butler, that is. Off the bench, Tyler Herro, 8 points. Victor Oladipo, only 5. But they really, I mean, though they gave up over 100 points, great defense from Miami. I mean, in this game, yeah, Jaylen Brown had 40 points, but he struggled taking care of the ball. And that was sort of the big emphasis in that game, that he was not very cautious with the ball. He wasn't smart with the ball. He had 7 turnovers in the game, but it always felt like a lot more than that. So though he gives you 40 points, great offensively, his plus-minus was negative 6. So overall, though he's giving you all the points, was not taking care of the basketball. And that's really why Miami was able to pull away late in this one. Now Marcus Smart gives you 16. Jason Tatum only 10 on 3 of 14 shooting. Grant Williams off the bench was the only one to score in double figures. He gave you 10 points on 2 of 6 shooting. But Boston at the Garden was not able to take game 3. And now Miami, as banged up as they are, they have a chance now. Not that they didn't have a chance before. They are the number 1 seed in the East. I just never looked at Miami and thought, man, after what Boston was able to accomplish over Milwaukee, they were going to be able to take on Boston in 6 or 7 games. Now I think it is going to go into 6 or 7. I'm just not as confident anymore in my Boston in 6 prediction. It still can happen, right? Tonight there will be game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals at the Garden. Celtics are a 6.5-point favorite, over under at 207.5. Tip off at 7:30 on ABC. If Miami can win that game, not saying they can run away with it at that point, up 3-1 and then going back to South Beach, but I feel like they can have a buffer game. You lose game 5 and still win it in 6. I have my, I guess, hunch or a gut feeling. I think Boston evens up the series tonight, but we'll just have to wait and see what goes on at the Garden. Then as for last night, man, I saw some highlights from this game. I didn't get a chance to watch it. But the Warriors win game 3 in Dallas, 109-100. And the best dunk, maybe I compare it to Ja Morant's dunk against Golden State a couple of rounds ago, or I guess it would have been last round, that is. No, it was Minnesota, excuse me. It was in the opening round, and Ja Morant completely posterized a Minnesota Timberwolf. But Andrew Wiggins last night, the former Jayhawk, put Luka Doncic on a poster that will be hung up everywhere in the Bay Area for the next couple of years, if not for a long, long time. Now, at first, they called it an offensive foul. And if you haven't seen the dunk, just go on to Twitter and look up Andrew Wiggins. Just type in his name. That'll be the first thing that pops up. I mean, we know Wiggins can fly. We know he's got one of the best verticals in the NBA. He has been knocked for most of his career of not living up to that
LeBron James type of potential that he got out of high school. But man, that was quite the dunk last night. I don't know how the official Mark Davis thought that that could be an offensive foul. But it was sort of the emphatic finish. It was also a, I don't want to say a statement. It was more of the, gosh, I'm blanking on the word of what to say. A microcosm of what has gone on in this series. Maybe I'm using that correctly. Maybe I'm not. You've heard me say that a lot.
It was like a tidbit or a
defining moment.
Yes,
like that. That just felt like exactly what Dallas has gone through for the first three games.
Right,
getting posterized by Golden State because no matter what lead they had, it was completely evaporated. And whether it was Steph going on a barrage of three pointers or having a barrage of three pointers, Klay Thompson getting back into this old version of himself, Draymond Green playing well, Wiggins playing well. No matter what it was, Dallas never could hang on. And now in a 3-0 hole, they're not climbing out of this. And I'm not a genius in thinking a team that falls behind 3-0 to a multiple NBA champion, or multiple-time NBA champion like Steph Curry, they're not coming back. It's that you just have seen the way these games have gone. There's nothing Dallas can do right at this point to climb back into this game. They do not have that magic anymore, the Luka magic. It's gone. It was gone the minute they won Game 7 against Phoenix. They have not even gotten any sort of little bit of magic. Magic dust, whatever you want to say. They don't have it anymore. Even Luka last night gives him 40. And nobody else, aside from Jalen Brunson or Spencer Dinwiddie, can really give them much. You cannot beat the Golden State Warriors with three guys. You could beat the Suns, which clearly it was shown, and even in Game 7, with only a handful of guys doing most of the scoring, but you know, Luka gives him 40 last night. Jalen Brunson gives him 20. And Spencer Dinwiddie gives him 26. Nobody else played well. Dorian Finney-Smith couldn't play well. Now, Powell couldn't play well. Reggie Bullock was 0 for 10. He might have had the worst performance of anybody in the postseason so far. Bertans only gave you 2. And it's just Dallas feels like not only are they on the cusp of being eliminated, I don't even know if they can come back and win a single game. I feel like Golden State can really put this away because Golden State's on one of those trends right now. Golden State is playing the way they've done in every one of their NBA championships. They just get hot at the right time, whether that be with KD or that be just be with Steph, Klay, and Draymond. They get hot at the right times. And Dallas right now is sort of taking the brunt of it because they did not play their best basketball against Memphis. Memphis beat them in Game 5, I want to say, by what, 45? Golden State was kind of just sleepwalking through that series, it felt like, and still 1-6. But as for this series, it was kind of, okay, now it's go time. We're on the doorstep. And now it kind of feels like no matter whoever Golden State faces in the NBA Finals, because they're going there, it's not going to be one of those dramatic Game 6s or Game 7s. Golden State's going to probably be able to put this away, not only in the Mavericks in 4, and then maybe taking down Boston or Miami in 4 or 5. Or not, maybe. I don't think they're going to sweep anybody in the Finals. Maybe 5. I could easily see the Golden State taking down either Miami or Boston in 5 games in the Finals. Because what they're doing to Dallas right now is probably the most shocking thing that's happened in the postseason. More than Dallas beating Phoenix, more than Boston beating Milwaukee. I mean, this is, though we expect a lot from Golden State, they're putting away, I think, everybody's last favorite team in the Finals. Because you like Luka Doncic. But even though Luka scored 40 points in back-to-back games, it was Golden State winning. And they win by 9 last night. Steph Curry gave him 31. Andrew Wiggins gave him 27. Klay with 19. Draymond Green with 10. And off the bench, Jordan Poole gave him 10 as well. So a lot of players scoring in double figures for Golden State. And now they will go back on Tuesday, staying in Dallas, that is, to take on the Mavs with a chance to move on to the NBA Finals. They'll be a 1.5-point favorite, or 1.5-point underdog, excuse me, against Dallas. Over under at 215.5. Tip off at 8 p.m. on TNT. So there is your NBA preview and recap from over the weekend. And now we'll take a 1-minute break. And when we come back, we'll play some fact or fiction. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. How about these numbers, Marco? Alec Lewis just tweeted this out because he had a great story yesterday.
Man.
The Royals' first 40 games are complete, and they raised 4 major questions. If you haven't had the chance to go read that on The Athletic, really good really good article to read right after the game, which is when he posted, right after yesterday's debacle, because you want to look for the future. But then he quote tweeted, or I guess retweeted his article, and he said that Nick Prado in May has a .431 on-base percentage with an OPS of .870. Vinny Pasquantino in May, a .361 OBP and an OPS of .123. Something about this feels like the Royals are about to make a move. It just has that feeling. I feel like today I could just be predicting false news, which I don't want to do. I feel like one of them is on their way to Kansas City. Maybe I'm just speculating or reading it too much. This has been like the third or fourth tweet in the last 24 hours that Alec Lewis has referenced Vinny Pasquantino. Even Andy Rogers tweeted out not too long ago that some Vinny Pasquantino numbers. Yeah, she said 4 minutes ago, after Vinny Pasquantino's 3-for-4 and 5 RBI afternoon, he now has an OPS of 1.023 in the month of May and is trending upward. It kind of feels like maybe it's just hinting at a player's playing really well, hitting really well, Vinny Pasquantino that is, and Nick Prado's OBP in May is north of 430. But here's the thing. The Royals can only wait so long to bring these guys back up because they're probably sitting down in Omaha and saying, what the hell do I have to do? Why are we still sitting here? It makes no sense. And if Dayton Moore's serious about his 40-game plan, the moves will be made today. The moves will be made in 5 minutes. Hell, 10 minutes after my show. Just do it. Just make the move that everybody's waiting to see and have Vinny Pasquantino in the lineup tonight in Arizona as the Royals will be taking on the Diamondbacks. We didn't even want to get into too much of a preview of that because I know most of you are not even too interested in the game tonight. But anyways, we'll do that right before Fact or Fiction. Greinke is on the bump tonight facing his former team in the D-backs. He'll go up against Zach Davies. Greinke 0-2 with a 3.48 ERA. Zach Davies is 2-2 with a 4.35 ERA. First pitch will be at 8:40 p.m. Central Time. Royals 14-26 on the year. Diamondbacks 21-22. Can the Royals snap their four-game losing streak with the lineup they continue to put out there under Mike Matheny? We'll see, and we'll see when first pitch rolls around at 8:40. With that, it's now time for some Fact or Fiction. 5 questions, 5 takes in under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
What time? What time?
What time?
What time is the game?
8:40.
Yeah, gosh.
I was West like, Coast. I had never. No, what, no, time, no. I like, what time is it? Game time? I don't know.
Fact or Fiction. The Royals field a lineup of Witt Jr., Melendez, Isbell, Pasquantino, and Prado in June.
Might be too quick. Might be too quick to have both Pasquantino and Prado in the major league lineup. I will say we'll see that lineup in August. I think Pasquantino's probably the first to come up, a little bit older in age, and has been hitting well and hitting better than Prado. But I think by August, we'll see that lineup together. But for June, I'm going to go fiction on that.
Fact or Fiction, the Royals trade Benintendi at the deadline.
It'd be so dumb not to. It would be really stupid to not trade Benintendi because here's the thing. Like we mentioned in the opening segment, the long segment that is, I think it was like 35 minutes. I went a little bit too long in the Royals rant. If you really like Andrew Benintendi, you can still bring him back. You can. You could trade him, get a haul of prospects, and then when Benintendi's a free agent after the season's end, you could say, Andrew, here's the money you wanted. Come back and play left field for us. You can do that. If the Royals do not trade Andrew Benintendi at the deadline, oh boy, do I have some serious questions for this front office. But I will go fact. I think the Royals do buck up and trade Benintendi at the deadline.
Fact or fiction, the Warriors sweep the Mavs tomorrow night.
I did say I think they would. I think the Mavs are at least good for one game. It's in Dallas. Luke is due to go for one of those crazy, crazy games. And Steph or Clay is due to have an off night, even Andrew Wiggins for that matter. I'll go fiction, not sweat, but I think the Warriors win in 5.
Fact or fiction, Andrew Wiggins gets another mega contract in his career.
He really hasn't been that bad of a player, like at all. We all want to harp on Andrew Wiggins. See, I think he's averaged, I think, over 16 points a game in every single one of his seasons. NBA, that is kind of a small total when you are a top draft pick.
Has made $150 million in his career, too.
I think if he keeps winning championships in the gold. Well, that's one thing for Andrew Wiggins. If he looks at Golden State and says, this is where I'll be a star, he probably won't ever want to leave. Now, will Golden State give him that contract? That remains to be seen.
And lastly, fact or fiction, the Cleveland Browns win the AFC North this year.
That's going to be a fun division to watch, won't it? Baltimore, Cincinnati, Cleveland. They got a lot of star power. And I'm very curious to see. They signed Jadeveon Clowney yesterday. I like the defense. I like the weapons. I don't like Deshaun Watson just as a person. But if he does play, I think Cincinnati's in trouble. I'm going to go fiction for now because Deshaun Watson's so up in the air if he's going to be starting at the beginning of the year. So I'll go fiction. They won't win the AFC North, but they will make the postseason this year. There is Ray Charles, so it is time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. You take it easy, Kansas City.